You're listening to an Epic Film Guys Cinema Beat Minisode.
The fate of the universe lies on your shoulders. Now, whatever you do, don't push this button. Because that will set off the bomb immediately and we'll all be dead. Now, repeat back what I just said.
I am Groot.
No! No, that's the button that will kill everyone. Try again.
I am Groot.
Mm-hmm.
I am Groot.
Uh-huh.
I am Groot.
No!
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Epic Film Guys podcast. Thanks for sticking with us here. And to those in the live stream, thank you for hanging out with us tonight as we record. We are moving on right now to something a little bit controversial. If we take a few steps back into the past, a couple of years, when James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy, his original first film, came out in the theaters, Nick and I kind of had a controversial feeling about that movie. Skip ahead a couple of years, and here we are, and we're about to do our featured review on the sequel to Guardians of the Galaxy. That would be James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Ooh.
Now, we did this. This is the first time we've done this in a while, where we've actually not exchanged any opinions on the film whatsoever prior to doing this review. So all of our reactions are going to be fresh right off the bat here. So, Nick, I'm pretty sure I know what's going to come out of your mouth here. I'm just going to throw it right to you. What were your initial thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
All right. Well, Justin, I did go ahead and pen a little bit of a written review, which I'll sample from, and which will be live the day that the podcast goes live. I'll put it up on Thursday. All right, but I'm going to sample from that as we go forward through the review here. And, you know, of course, I know you'll want to chime in at various points, and we'll have our discussions, and then, I don't know, maybe you'll quit the podcast whatever else is. I don't even know. You know what? I came out of this movie, Justin, and, you know, I rewatched the first one before I went to see the second one in the hopes that maybe I missed something the first time around, or maybe I was a little bit too harsh with that 5 out of 10 rating. And I came out of that film, out of that second viewing, and I was like, fuck it. I don't even care. It was still 5 out of 10 for me. It just couldn't improve on the many, many, many flaws that I felt that it had. And Justin, I went to this movie kind of with that weighing on my mind, but also with a certain level of optimism. As you know, of course, we love to go into things and we love to, you know, keep an open mind. Hopefully every time a film comes out, it's always a chance to right the ship. Always. At least, you know, if you've seen some things in the franchise or whatever, that doesn't really do it for you. So I came out of this film and I was absolutely fucking blown away, Justin. Absolutely blown away by how much this fucking movie sucks. It's a fucking piece of shit. Oh my God, I hated this movie. Even worse than the first movie. I've got a lot of stuff to say about it, but that's my initial reaction. So I'll go ahead and kick it over to you.
Okay. Well, I'll be a little bit easier on it. And I'm not sure if you were expecting that I was going to come out of the gate and be like, I loved it. The difference between you and I.
No, because I watched the first one with you. And I mean, despite the fact that you've warmed up to it in the later years, I remember you coming out of the first one and you had a lot of things to say about it. So,
well, you know, my rating definitely moved up on the first one. And Loy Sauce himself asked me the other day, hey, if you had to throw a quick top 5 Marvel cinematic films together, what would your top 5 be? And the first Guardians would be at number 5. I'll be completely honest about that. I'm very proud about that. It is what it is. So going into this, I really didn't have any expectations. I don't even think I watched the final trailer for it. Because let's just face it, okay? The first film had a huge novelty factor of the music, the look to it. It was different. It was poppy. It was popcorn fun. This one felt like, Nick, the equivalent of cinematic fast food. Okay. Now, you know me, I don't eat fast food, barely ever, very random. When I do, I'm usually wasted. Now, what do I do when I'm wasted and I get that fast food? I smell it and it smells amazing. And I look at it and I'm like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. I haven't had this in so long.
I was going to say, you turn into some fucking homeless dude who lives out behind Ned Devine's bar.
And I indulge in this fast food, Nick. And what happens to me when I eat, say, for example, if I do, not the Hopester, if I do eat McDonald's, that fast food.
Oh, it makes you feel like shit. You hate yourself for it.
I'm indulging it and it's tasting great. It's tasting amazing. And about halfway through, maybe three quarters of the way through, I've got the large fry almost all the way down. I've got the Diet Coke drink, you know, the double cheeseburger, the Big Mac, the whole deal. And I'm like, wait a minute. I had so much fun enjoying that I forgot that what I'm eating is chemical garbage. And I'm starting to feel shit. Because I was eating it. That was kind of the feeling that I got upon watching Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. But hey, the point being, I still enjoy eating that shit food. I still do enjoy eating it. I still have a fun time eating it, but I regret it in the long run. That was my initial thoughts on watching this film. I will say this much flat out, my crowd that I was in loved the shit out of this movie. They were balls to the wall, going nuts with it. No one stopped laughing throughout the entire thing. I did have a lot of fun with it. That's not to say it's a good movie, because I'll be getting to the problems that I had with it in a little bit. But let's just open this up here. Let's go ahead and open up our feelings on the film here. Nick, you said you had a lot to say about it. I did not hate it.
I have a great deal to say about this fucking movie.
Go ahead and get right to it, though.
All right. Well, Jared made after your analogy that you said was good over in the live stream, Jared said, and then a few hours later, your colon punishes you. That's a very, very apt description. So like I said, I do want to just kind of sample from my written review just a little bit here, Justin. So I'll do that now. Okay. Guardians 2 opens where we last left these characters. They're cracking wise. They're having fun while the fate of the universe is kind of on the line. All right. So they're in the employ of the Sovereign, which is like this beautiful gold skin race of aliens. They're obsessed with beauty and perfection. At least that's what I gleaned from them. Okay. So the opening of this film, Justin, it's by far its best asset, or at least what it promises is its most beautiful asset. Instead, this immediately set me wrong from the beginning, okay? Instead, it doubles down. And if you remember the mid-credit scene of Guardians 1, what is it? It's the little Groot dancing in the little flower pot with Drax sitting there. Okay? Yeah. So it doubles down on that mid-credit scene, and it decides to set the entire opening credit sequence of this film against baby Groot dancing as the rest of the Guardians battle this giant, colossal, interdimensional beast, mostly off-screen. So this is what James Gunn is saying to you right up front here. It's doubling down on the cute and funny moments in favor of shuffling everything else off to the background. This won't be the only time in the film that Baby Groot mugs for screen time. And he wants to steal the collective hearts of the audience and make everybody ooh and ah and rush to the toy store after the film to grab yourself a giant plastic baby tree. And that's what this film really, really felt like to me, Justin. It felt like a series of fucking toy commercials and a series of like commercials for the fucking soundtrack. That's really what this film felt like to me. I felt like it had good moments, and we definitely want to talk about some of the better moments that it had.
Yeah, we definitely do, because
Where it just, it made me so fucking angry. Like, and I thought that the opening sequence was cute at first, like when they had the baby Groot dancing, but this thing went on for like five fucking minutes.
It was overdone. It was too long, but hey, I have to give them kudos for how it was shot, though. I thought it was very impressively shot.
It was impressively shot.
You saw
the
background action and the way that they would interject, for example, Star-Lord would fly in behind Groot and then kick him aside. And then it was very expertly done. So I enjoyed the visual aspect of it, but I guarantee you that we're on the same page. When it came down to, I'm like, I did look at my watch. I'm like, dude, this has been going on for five fucking minutes.
Yeah.
Interesting way to open the film, because let's face it, we don't see that interesting of openings to movies like this anymore. It usually just jumps right in and that's it. So I liked the idea. And I will go through this review and say that I do praise Gunn for his sensibilities and him being different, because this guy started out as a B movie director. So
yes, he did. Yep.
I get where he's coming from in a lot of this. So I'm not totally hating on this movie. Don't get me wrong at all, but I totally know where you're coming from. The one thing that I want to throw out there as we're getting to this, Nick, is that not only was that opening overdone, everything in this film was overdone, including a lot of the jokes. And we get a lot of the same jokes. I'm going back to them over and over again. And I'm like, okay, I chuckled the first time. That's not to say they weren't all bad, because I mean, I laughed my fucking ass off during this movie, but it felt like everything was recycled and recycled. And as you got about halfway through this, you realize the novelty factor of the first film was already worn off.
Yep. Yeah. And you mentioned that where the novelty factor has worn off, and you're exactly right that a lot of the stuff in this film really kind of feels forced, or it really kind of feels staged. And there's moments where the laughs do this, and there's also moments, and this film has a great soundtrack, I feel, for the most part. Again, it does kind of what the first film did, but the problem with that is, whereas in the first film they always played it kind of naturally, this film it feels like that there are scenes that are deliberately staged to force a musical piece in there for no reason whatsoever.
Even the dialogue is written to open it into the song that's played. That, and in the first one, we got a lot of songs. Let's face it. There were a lot of songs. They were great songs. But I felt like, Nick, that there were like 20 fucking songs in this thing. I felt like there was a song every 5 minutes, honestly.
Yeah, and that's just it. Like I said, this whole thing just played as like this exceedingly long series of toy commercials. Like I said, it's not that there's not fun parts about it. And it's not that there aren't really good elements to this film that I definitely want to touch on. But the problem is, like I said, when you open the film with a 5 minute long sequence of the utterly adorable Baby Groot dancing around and having a great time, all you're trying to do is fucking pander to your audience. And that's exactly what Gunn is doing here. He's pandering to the audience. He's telling them that it doesn't matter what you want from this film. We're going to double down on all the absolutely absurd, laugh-worthy moments that you thought you loved about the first one, and we're going to explode them like five times over. Take, for instance, Drax in this film. Now, in the first film, Justin, I don't know how you feel about this, so you'll have to follow my thread here, but in the first film, you know, he's very literal. Like, he doesn't have a sense of kind of, you know, irony, or he doesn't really have this sense of colloquialisms or anything like that. He's very, very literal. And he was kind of put in situations that would play against that, which turned it into a funny thing. Okay, in this film, it seems like what Gunn did is he just walked up to the back of Batista, who I thought did great in this film as well. I loved him. I laughed at a lot of his stuff.
He was fantastic.
But it seems like Gunn kind of went up to him at times and fucking just turned him up to 11. And that's kind of the way that this film goes. There's that one moment in the trailer that we see where Mantis, you know, reads Chris Pratt's emotions.
Reads Star-Lord's emotions. Yep.
Exactly. Yep. And then Drax starts laughing out loud, and it's this whole kind of boastful laugh, like laughing at him. You're so embarrassed, blah, blah, blah. But it's kind of it's really, really over the top. You mentioned that earlier. That's exactly how this entire fucking film feels. Literally from beginning to end. I mean, let's take the fucking the guy on Yondu's ship. His name's fucking Taserface, and that joke is played out about 1,000 times, and it's funny
exactly
maybe the first one or two.
Yeah. That's exactly my point. That, and I know that our brother from Netflix and Swill, Caleb, and Loisos were talking on our Facebook page on my post when I saw the film about Batista's laugh and how there's so many forced fucking laughs in this. And I feel bad because, hey, I mean, it is what it is, but Batista's decent in his roles lately. Okay, let's face it, but don't give the guy something too challenging. I mean, the whole thing with like him, even for example, him telling Mantis that she's ugly, I thought it was funny the first two times maybe, but they played it like four it or five times by the end. That's exactly my point here.
And what I thought was kind of criminal about it, Justin, and we'll leave Drax aside after this, but if you think about him in the first film, like a lot of Batista's best moments as the character were like some of the kind of deeper, more impactful, more emotional scenes, and you don't get as many of those in this film. And I think Batista has the chops to do it. He definitely proved it the first time around, but they don't give him that kind of stuff this time around in favor of just trying to make him make the audience laugh more. And I feel that was a misstep.
The main issue I had, I thought he was fine in it. He was one of the ones that got the shittier end of the stick, so to speak, in this one. But what I realized about halfway through this thing, Nick, is I was like, there's something missing from this. Something should be showing up. Oh, right. That's called the plot. Where the fuck is the plot? What is happening? Where are we going with this? Okay, so Kurt Russell comes down, and I love the hell out of him chewing scenery out of this movie. It's great to see Kurt Russell in a big movie like this. He was fine. I enjoyed him and his rapport with Chris Pratt. I thought they were great. But the way that he shows up, it's just like so magical. As they're trying to escape this fleet, trying to kill them. He just shows up, saves them, brings them down. And then they get to the scene where he just comes out of the ship. It's in the trailer and I'm your father. And then it cuts to a different scene. Then it comes back and they're at a campfire. And I'm like, you just lost any impact you had with what you could have had with them first meeting. And then like I said, it just, I felt like, okay, so you're just going to keep throwing different scenes at me. You're going to throw this scene at me, then it's going to cut to this. Like, almost like the way that, you know, the prequels, the Star Wars prequels did it, mm-hmm. where they would just like jarringly cut to a different scene, knowing that Star Wars does that, but it didn't do it naturally. Where I'm like, okay, I'm just in for a bunch of like a montage of a bunch of different scenes throughout. But the key thing here is, and I realized this early on, even though I started to feel like it was dragging about midway through, Nick, I realized what this film was about. And it had a great heart to it. This film was about family. And that's all it really needed to be about in Gunn's eyes as he was writing this thing. I am going to give it points because of the simple fact that, yes, there is slight world building in this movie. There is. But it didn't have to connect to every single other character. We didn't have to have cameos. I mean, hey, whatever. Howard the Duck's in it, but I fucking love that. I expected that. But you know what I mean? Like, it didn't have to. We didn't have to see the Avengers. We didn't have to see Thor show up. We didn't have to have the Hulk. It was self-contained in a way where I could enjoy these characters doing their own thing. And there were some heartwarming moments. I feel like there was some great character development for Rocket. I felt like there was some great character development for Star-Lord. Gamora and Nebula, they had some great character development in the film. And it was all pretty well put together on screen, and it was all very well acted. So, you know, while I had issues with that, there was a heart to it. And I felt like, you know, it's a bright-looking, colorful, fun movie with awesome rock music to it. It should have a heart, and it did have that for me.
Yeah, and you mentioned the family aspect of it, and that's actually something that I really touched on in my written review as well. With fantastic performances turned in by Karen Gillian as Nebula, who I really think stole the show in the film. I really, really think she didn't get a lot of anything to do in the first movie, so she really took the material that they gave her this time and fucking turned it up to 11. And, you know, Michael Rooker, also as Yondu, really, really great.
Oh my God, he was fantastic. He was so great.
The saddest thing about this movie for me is that the plot's main thrust, and that's Kurt Russell revealing himself as Quill's father, is also, as you said, it's one of the weakest points. And it's easy to kind of telegraph, and spoiler alert, I don't care, his villainous turn way earlier in the movie, because the script continually hits you over the head with it. It continually has Mantis being like, no, I've got to tell you something. And you continually have Gamora saying, no, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong here. And his would-be father-son relationship with Peter never quite feels genuine. He comes off as if he's kind of trying too hard to bridge the gap too fast. But I will say, all that said, I feel like this was probably deliberate on Gunn's part. And
right.
He probably really want to sell that as well as he should have. But I think he probably should have done more to sell that, because then it would have actually made the villainous turn actually mean something. It really doesn't mean anything, and it really doesn't come as a surprise, because the film telegraphs it from so fucking far away.
Well, Nick, and that's a cut you off, but that, and we don't see another central villain in the forefront at all. I'm not sure if they were trying to sell it as all of those, you know, painted gold people were going to be it, but I knew they were. Yeah. You knew from the beginning that wasn't going to be it. So I'm like, okay, usually we see a central villain by now. So I have to ask you this. I know you're not done with your written review, but from a villain standpoint, who is better? I know you hate Ronan from the original, so was the villain treatment done better in this than the first one? I have to ask you that, 'cause I'm just curious what you think, because I thought it was.
I mean, I'll say that I like Russell better than I like Lee Pace, you know, in the first film. I absolutely think Kurt Russell's a much better actor. I love him, but I don't think that they did any better the second time around than they did the first. They did the same goddamn thing in this movie that they did in the fucking last movie. Let's Ego is Kurt Russell's character. He's a living fucking planet, and he's an ageless god. Okay.
What is it that he wants to do? What does he want to do?
He wants to take over the fucking universe.
That's enough. There. It's all you to say. That's it, dude, right there.
That's not the point,
though. It's the same fucking thing. That's the same fucking thing.
The point is, it, just like in the first film, what happens in the first film? You have Ronan the Accused, who has an infinity fucking stone, but he doesn't use it because the plot requires him not to. In this film, you have Ego, who, I mean, essentially, like I said, he's a god who is the entire fucking planet, but he instead lets a bunch of fucking space mercenaries run around on him and doesn't do anything about it until the plot requires him to. So if you tell me that this thing is essentially a living god who is an entire planet, and these beings are all on this planet, and he can't just fucking evaporate them all in the blink of an eye, like, I'm sorry, it's fucking laughable. It's a fucking joke. And, like, the fact that he easily gets bitch slapped by Peter later on in the movie. And I also was kind of like a little put off by that. I mean, I like I said, I think Russell was better in this than Pace was in the first, but I think this film shits on his villain just as badly as it shits on Pace and on Ronan in the first film. It just, it makes them laughably stupid, and it makes them not exercise these amazing powers that they have to let these other characters defeat them. It makes them like utterly and completely stupid, and I that's just piss poor writing. You should make your villain powerful and exercise that power and make them a threat. You shouldn't make them exceedingly stupid so that the good guys can beat them.
I get that. I totally get that. The one thing that I started to realize as we were going through the film about three quarters of the way through, I don't know if I was necessarily the target audience for this. And we started off this review talking about the opening sequence of dancing baby group. And my daughter, she's 13. She saw it. She loved it. She thought it, said it was great. And the general audience in my theater laughed their ass off. Every joke landed for them. They were laughing throughout the entire thing. Giving a shout out to my boy, Kevin, from Picture Lock. He was very much on the same page as you and I about this thing. He was really not that impressed with it. He was very upset with it. He even actually liked it less than I did. So I know there are critics out there that are on the same page as we are with the issues we had with this thing. The main thing I came out of this with, though, and we complain about this a lot on the show. Anyone that knows us knows that we have gone back and forth about our disdain for Marvel in general, their formula, is that it feels good to me, Nick, that I have a choice now. I have a choice between I can watch the equivalent of, you know, a B science fiction movie that's got mindless nonsense to it that looks beautiful, by the way, because James Gunn shot this with an 8K camera. You know, with a great soundtrack. It's fun. It's got good jokes. It's probably one of the funniest comedy related films I've seen all year. Or I can go watch fucking Iron Man 3, or I can go watch, you know, Captain America 1, or I can go watch whatever else, you know, Thor the Dark World. I just feel I'm happy that Marvel's giving him at least enough freedom with the tone and the feel of the movie to kind of go out on a limb and do something a little different,
definitely
even though
the movie he wants to make.
That's what I appreciate about it. And I did have fun with it, even though the novelty factor wore off. Now, anyone that knows me on the show knows that I love 80s everything. And there was so many 80s references in this thing. Some a little bit of too forced, even though, hey, man, spoiler alert, I fucking love the Hoff. I love David Hasselhoff. Just make him a character in the movie if you're going to have him in it. Why just have him show up at the end in a fucking after credit scene?
I hated the callback to it in the beginning of the movie, because, I mean, Peter Quill was what, like fucking 8 or 9 when he was kidnapped from Earth or taken from Earth by Yondu in the first film. Okay, but then this kid, and like this is the second film now where he has like this incredible depth of pop culture knowledge from fucking Earth in the 80s, which, I mean, he was fucking 9. Like, he's gonna remember a couple of things, but like it was the same thing as the Footloose thing in the first movie to me, where it felt almost too tongue-in-cheek. But then when they did a callback to it later and the fucking Hoff did the cameo, I about fucking died laughing, just because it was the Hoff fucking showing up on this.
I mean, I liked it. And, you know, and I have to give Gunn credit for it was actually more entertaining. I wish that every Marvel film would do like the 5 post credit scenes, because it kept me interested. I'm like, oh, what am I going to see next? Okay, at least it'll be entertaining and I don't have to wait until all the way to the fucking end of the movie, you know, to see what they're going to show. But moving aside, let's just get it out of the way here. I'm going to say that one of my biggest problems with the film, also what I've already stated on the show here, and I'm sure anyone that knows me will know I'm going to complain about this. Why did you have Sylvester fucking Stallone in this movie? Please tell me, why did you put him in it for 5 fucking minutes? I was so pissed. I'm like, yes, Tango and Cash back together again. I'm like, we're going to see Kurt Russell and Stallone on screen together. And we didn't. It was cool. We get to see Rooker and Stallone back together again because they were in Cliffhanger together and they were great in that. But do we literally see Stallone for less? It's less than 5 minutes of screen time. Now, Loy Sauce had said, you know, it looks like they're setting him up. Obviously, at the end, you see him again. He's going to be a character in the third film. Cool. Awesome. But dude, don't have Sylvester Stallone in a movie.
I really doubt like he's going to have a much bigger role in the third one than he had in this one.
What, he's going to sit on a fucking throne and bark orders? Come on, you're wasting Sylvester Stallone.
He might be movie for 5 minutes too, but he's definitely not going to have any bigger of a role in it than it's. First of all, it's Sylvester Stallone. You know he's. I mean, he took this because it's like, okay, it'll be fun. It's 5 minutes, and he probably earned a pretty hefty paycheck for it. But you know, he's not going to take on like this bigger role in it without getting like he's going to want like a starring role in it, and that's just not Guardians of the Galaxy. Like the Guardians are the ones that are centerpiece.
So you know that's why for me it was kind of disappointing, because the idea of seeing Kurt Russell and Stallone in a movie like this with James Gunn sensibilities as a director made me really excited to see that. And yes, the scene at the beginning with Yondu and Stallone's character was good. It was literally less than 2 minutes long. So for me, it was a little bit disappointing with that. I'm like, yo, dude, this guy was just nominated for an Oscar for Creed. I'm still backing the guy as an actor. I want to see him do good movies, good roles. So I was disappointed by that. So as a Stallone fan, an action fan, an 80s guy, that was one thing. They could have done way more with Stallone.
Hey, I did wonder if you would have a problem with that.
Well, dude, you're going to put all these different freaking 80s jabs in there, all these little pop culture moments, and you've got Stallone in the movie and you don't even use him at your, you know, best ability. So whatever.
I got a question for you, Justin.
Yes.
The extremely blatant Thing reference. How did you feel about that one?
You know, I didn't even realize until after I saw the film and I thought about it. I kind of expected Gunn to go there, knowing that he directed Slither, which had a lot of references to a lot of other 80s horror films and science fiction films. And I love Slither. Slither is one of my favorite modern day horror films. It was fine, but it wasn't. I mean, I kind of expected some kind of reference to some other Russell role in it. At one point, I even said, hey, dude, I wouldn't even be surprised if Gunn put a fucking eye patch on him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, there's just too much about this film, I think. And like I said, part of my biggest problem with the first film was just the woefully shitty villain. And the fact that, like, aside from the fact that the Guardians were really well done, everything else about the film was so fucking subpar that the whole thing was uneven to me. And this doubled down on that. It exchanged scenes of character development, and it exchanged scenes where it should have been chugging a plot forward for like scenes where they're jumping through all these different dimensional jumps and stuff, which was funny for a few seconds, but then they kept that scene going forever. And then they came back to that scene again. And that's just kind of the lesson from this film, I think, is excess. Way, way, way too much excess in this film. And then the climax of this film, Justin, this is one last thing I want to say about it, and then I'm going to throw a star rating on it and fucking walk away, because I was, like I said, so fucking disappointed by this. And I really, really went into this. I really, really wanted this to be good. And I heard really good things about it going into it. I heard that the reaction was really positive, even better than the first. So I was hoping that would at least tick my score up a little bit. And the entire thing, Justin, as you said, is about family. Okay. And one of the biggest themes of family in this film as fathers. Okay. So the film makes it incredibly obvious that this is going to be one of its biggest running themes with Yondu, with Ego, with Peter Quill, all throughout the film. And then what do I hate more than anything in the film, Justin? Anything even worse than a shitty villain. What do I hate more than anything in a film? It's when a director, it's when a writer pulls out a big, giant fucking mallet and beats you in the head with the fucking theme of the movie. And that's what this fucking movie did at the end. It starts grabbing and having these characters deliver all this dialogue like, he's your father, but he ain't your daddy, and all this fucking bullshit. And it's like, you could have had all that dialogue cut. You could have just had those scenes in silence, because the scene says it for you. You don't need to have these characters spitting this fucking garbage, literally punching the audience in the face with the theme of the film. And I'm giving this one, I'm actually dropping a point off of this one from the last film. This is officially my worst ever Marvel film, worse than Thor the Dark World, if you can fucking believe that. 4 out of 10 for me. Fuck this movie. Fuck the Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't give a fuck about the third movie coming out. I really don't give a shit.
Well, I definitely differ on that rating for sure. I definitely had a ball with this one to some extent. I thought that a lot of the stuff with Rocket was fun. I liked the visual aesthetic. It was beautiful looking. So much work went into the visual aesthetic of the film. I thought it had a lot of heart, and I definitely disagree with you to some extent. I didn't feel like anything was beating me over the head at the end. But I did feel like it was a little bit jarring at times, and it did drag, and, you know, it had some pacing issues. And, you know, I didn't totally buy Russell as the villain at times. So, I mean, there were more things I didn't like about it than I did. But still, overall, I walked out. Like I said, that cinematic fast food is the best equivalent that I could put. It's I ate it. I enjoyed it while I was eating it. Afterward, I kind of felt bad because I was like, hey, this is an actual nutrients. This is an actual food. What I'm eating is just made to look good. It tastes good, but it's not real food. And that's what I think of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 rating because of the simple fact that I did have a ball with it. That's not a great rating. 6 out of 10 for me is it was okay. And yeah. I had more than a few issues. So it's not like I'm giving this an 8 or anything like that. I wanted to, as I was going through it, I'm like, I hope I really love this movie. I did not walk out loving it. But it did still have a lot of the elements that made me enjoy it. So by no means is it my least favorite Marvel film. Iron Man 3, even Iron Man 2, Thor the Dark World. I mean, honestly, I'll be completely honest, even though my rating is lower on this than the first Thor movie, I'd be more apt to putting this in and watching it on my fucking 4K TV any day of the week just because of the way it looks and sounds. And that's being superficial, but I'm just being completely honest. So for me, 6 out of 10. And Nick, it's a 4 out of 10 rating for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It is what it is. If you ever change your mind about leaving me behind, oh, bring it to me.